Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult language and content. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, when you get a chance, go to Amazon and check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And for tonight's show, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry with quotes from the poet Charles Simic. And so tonight we will be delving into that poetry, and I, for one, am certainly looking forward to it. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
Good evening. All right.
Awesome sauce. I have to say it's a nice night tonight. It's good. It's quiet. You know, a night filled with poetry. And, of course, you know, as always, I look forward to hanging out with you and hopefully some other cool poets and, you know, all that jazz. But I can't remember how I came across Charles Simic. But I just absolutely thought, you know, I came across him. I was looking at some quotes by him, and I thought, you know what? I think this would be great for an after midnight show. I think there's a lot of great lines here that can, will inspire people. And, so, you know, and let's see, I don't know, have you ever read or heard of, did you ever read any of Charles Simic's poetry?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I actually haven't gotten to read his poetry yet. I have to admit, I only found his poems. I should read his poetry because I know a lot of people responded really positively to this one. And in fact, Rich F. posted on the side of the contest, he commented that he really appreciated, you know, being introduced to him and how much he really liked his poetry. So I thought that was cool. All right. Well, with those thoughts in mind, what do you say, Rex? Shall we go ahead and start pushing this ball uphill?
Sure. Got War-Torn Eyes by Grant G. Addiction, man, drives people crazy. A screaming mind don't sleep at night. No matter where you see them, feet walk fast when holding dimes. The dealer man ain't no secret. He drives around in fancy cars. Homeless folk will beg to feed it. The calming souls of insane minds. Crazy sight, alive and breathing. It makes you weep like war-torn eyes. Makeshift camps, a stench that's heaving. Two brothers and a sister hobble out an alleyway together. One leg gone and below their thigh. End poem.
Great read, Rex, and I hear that we get to have a cat serenade in the background. Obviously, somebody has an opinion about poetry tonight. All right. Well, I really like Grant's poetry, and I like with many of his writes, he delves into social issues. Issues of you know, the dealer, the homeless, you know, this is so hard hitting in its imagery. Dealer man ain't no secret. He drives around in fancy cars. Homeless folk will beg to feed it. The calming soul of insane minds. You know, he the whole idea that how addiction, you know, happens, it's passed down from the rich to the poor, and it's those who suffer from it. And, you know, it gives us a vision of people who suffer through addiction, who suffer through homelessness. I especially, you know, and he chose, I should say which prompt he chose. He chose the prompt four, which was three mismatched poetry. Three mismatched shoes at the entrance of a dark alley, which I think was actually one of our more popular chosen prompts. Crazy sights are live and breathing. It'll make you weep like war-torn eyes. And I like that phrase, and I like that he went with that as the title. I think it was a strong title choice, war-torn eyes, because you don't have to be in the actual middle of a literal war. You can be in the middle of a social and economic war, the middle of the war against drugs. Really just a strong right all the way through that reminds us about the ugliness of life. Very well done, and great read there, Rex. And what are your thoughts on Grant's poem?
Well, the first three stanzas hit on that note of addiction, but that fourth, along with the fourth one, but that fifth one with the war-torn eyes, I kind of hit that note of somebody who's been there, done that, and is now part of those homeless folks because there's that need in calming the soul of an insane mind, so to speak. Can't get those, the vividity of those images from out of his mind. And that last stanza, that last line is a little funky. Two brothers and a sister hobble out of an alleyway together. one leg gone from below their thigh. It kind of implies that the three of them are one leg short each, and they need each other for support walking out. That's kind of a funky look. Well, not look in that arrangement, but the way the line's set up, one leg gone from below their thigh. Not just hers, or one of the brothers, but there. Did you get lost?
You know what?
Hello?
I was talking on mute. No, don't worry. I'm here. Oh. I'm here. I was just talking on mute. But I was saying how much I was glad that you had brought up that line and that it does give you like that kind of a funky image in your head. But it also works really well metaphorically on how, you know, when, you know, we're torn apart, we do have to lean on each other for support. So, you know, so great comment there. And I would like to welcome Lawrence to the show. Hey, Lawrence, how's it going?
It's going splendidly. How are you?
Oh,
what's
I'm doing
cooking?
Great. I was glad to see you put a right on the board. That's awesome.
Well, it was the last night. I woke up from an unanticipated nap. Having said goodnight to those who hold my heart in their hands. And then I woke up and said, I wasn't even sure what day it was. I said, I better check all poetry to see where I'm at. I said, tonight's the, yeah. And then I looked at the contest and I said, I got an hour. I'm going to whip up something. Because, you know, I love late night. It's more to than 10 o'clock. I don't attend it often because I'm of an age and it gets hard, but I really like the subject matter.
Oh, yeah.
I like the electricity that can fill the air. Not to denigrate 10 o'clock at night at all, but there's something magic about some of the prompts you guys put up. So I figured I would try and do my best and participate.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. And did you get a chance to hear Grant's poem or to read it?
Yeah, I did. For some reason, it made me think about that, what's that three-legged race where two people tied the third leg together? What is it called?
A three-legged race.
Yes, that's what it's called a three-legged race.
I thought it had a name. But, you know, if you guys can't make four legs become three, you're not going to win that race. I still think it has a good thing. At any rate, so when you came to that last stanza, one leg gone from below their thigh, each of them missing a leg, immediately made me think of a three-legged race. Not that that necessarily made any sense, but it just showed how you have to cooperate with others, sometimes under the most difficult circumstances, to get to where you want to go. And I think that War-Torn Eyes, as a poem about addiction, I mean, you've got to depend on others to help you get through. I thought that made a lot of sense.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment there. And, yeah, you do sometimes have to work with other people in the most desperate of times. So wonderful observation. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Darkness of the Soul by Martha Gethel. And you have a sound cloud.
Yes, we do, and here we go.
Darkness of the Soul by Martha Gethel. The darkness, yes, I know it well. Some days I'm sure I live in hell. The darkness in me, it whispers sweet, just give in and accept your defeat. Death's arms are always open wide. They'll be there to welcome you inside. Why should you continue to fight? You'll know you'll never get it right. The darkness beckons me each day with death's toys to come and play. Death sings its songs to me, you know. In my mind, the music ebbs and flows. Temptation whispers to me, sweet, you don't have to live with your defeat. I'm here waiting, such peace I'll give when you no longer strive to live. I dance with my darkness every day. With death's angel, I dip and sway. I live with darkness each day, it's true. It moved in the day I lost you. End of poem.
Great read there, Martha. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you cannot call in, but you can make a recording of your poem, that is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Laurent, your thoughts on this poem?
I would love to comment intelligently. I never found the text.
Oh.
Oh, it probably got covered up.
Well, I went back a few minutes. I just didn't see it.
Okay. That's all right. Well, let's go ahead and get back there so you can go ahead and give it a read and, you know, like to yourself, obviously.
Thank you.
And, oh, there we go. Rex did. He's quick. All right. Well, while you're reading through that, I'll go ahead and get Rex's thoughts. So your thoughts, Rex.
Well, hang on a second. I thought it was, I got the distinct impression of music. But I can't think of the name of the song. It goes, do, something old and vibrant that's just within. Almost like a requiem.
Kind of like a Phantom of the Opera type thing?
Yeah, but that organ music kind of just sits there and envelops you. That's what you get out of this. The darkness in me whispers sweet. Death's arms. Why should I continue to fight? It beckons me each day. Sings songs to me. Temptation whispers. It's got that nice lulling note of that deep, dark music that just kind of washes over and kind of bathes you in its essence. And then you get that last line, it moved in the day that I lost you. So you get the final note as to why the happenstance of the music itself is so overwhelming and consistent. But there's almost a nice thought to a generosity in the moment. That darkness is the it kind of speaks to the notation of willingness to walk within it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that you brought up there's kind of this sense of music, of something dark, like the organ music or the, you know, I mentioned the Phantom of the Opera, and it does have that feel to it. I think these are beautifully written couplets, and I do like how there is within this personification of death and an acceptance of death. And I really like death sings its songs to me, you know, in my mind the music ebbs and flows. I had to laugh a little bit when you were trying to figure out the song.
Well, it's kind of hard to reverb organ music.
No, I think you did a wonderful job. But the thing is, it just made me laugh because I saw this talk show where Jack Black and Elton John were both guests, and Black was trying to explain to Elton John his favorite Elton John song, but he couldn't remember the lyrics or the name of it. So he was just like doing air guitar and you know, like humming the notes. And that's what it just made me think of. And so I just had to laugh a little bit as you try to show us the organ music. So very cool. But I really like the way that oftentimes when Martha writes about darkness, she writes about it in such a way that she sees the beauty of it. She sees that there is an offering of peace within the acceptance of the end of life. And I really felt there's an emotive line all the way through, and especially in the ending line, I live with darkness each day, it's true, it moved in the day that I lost you. You know, such a horrible sense of that, how much one person can impact our lives. So, excellent write and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, darkness is a theme often treated in poetry, especially after 12:30. And it's pretty universal. We all have to accept darkness at some point into our lives. But this is almost a personification of darkness, because from stanza to stanza to stanza, darkness, I know it well. Darkness in me whispers sweet, accept your defeat. And then you have death's arms always open wide. Why should you continue to fight? Darkness beckons me each day. It sings its songs to me. Its temptation whispers to me sweet. But then all of a sudden there's a reversal. Waiting for peace, I dance with my darkness. She has found a way to accept it, almost. She may resent it. She may not like it. But I lived with darkness each day, it's true, and then the day that I lost you. It's a very appealing poem, because I think it speaks to so many people who have had to accept death and the darkness that comes with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. It does have that relatability to it. So, excellent comment. And what do you got for us next there, Rex?
Outshines by I Am Snail Dixon. With emphasis on the Dixon.
Who's reading this one? Rex. Am I on mute? Oh, dear. Rex has dropped. Okay. Well, you know what? I will assume that he wanted me to read it. So I will, hold on, I'll call you shortly. Okay, there we go. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and read it, and as soon as I get done reading it, you go into commenting, Lauren, so I can call Rex back in. All right.
Okay.
And this is Outshines by I Am Snail Vixen, and it goes like this. The sun outshines their smear campaigns today, and I read as I gently swing in the hammock. I am Selma, and my Louise is the ever-changing book in my hand. Ride or die. I sway in peace as I notice the echoes of the lies and rumors start to fade. They even make playful, silly faces as they wave goodbye and return to sender. The breeze picks up a bit, and they are gone. I allow a subtle smile. The dark night of the soul was here, or so it wrote all over my walls. It came because my heart was too heavy. I had never learned to unpack. I would say it's someone else's turn, because I'm in the sunshine today, baking in the warmth of acceptance and letting go. I wish them the peace that I feel now. Getting to this point was in no way easy. I have no trouble at all now, facing the edge of the cliff. Louise, let's keep going. End poem.
Wow. That was a great read, Pam. Thank you so much. And thank you, I Am Snail Vixen, for this compelling piece. accessing Thelma and Louise is always fun, because that was a kind of a seminal movie with a rather startling ending. And she uses the movie as a metaphor for life, almost, and the darkness of the soul, or the way that darkness in general was received by that individual whose heart became heavy. And, you know, you get to a point where you never really learn to unencumber yourself, or, as the poet says, to unpack. But the moment that you can accept that darkness, you can also let it go. Because only by bringing it into you can you get rid of it. Otherwise, it's always at your walls, hammering, hammering, hammering. And you gain a certain peace from that acceptance. And you reach a final point where getting to that finality was not easy. But once acceptance becomes what it is, at that point, going over the edge of the cliff, metaphorically speaking, becomes much easier. You have no trouble facing the edge of what really terrified you or bothered you before. So by all means, Louise, let's keep going. Really a very a clever piece, skillfully written, very appealing. And now let's see if our erstwhile hosts are back with us.
Pam, are you back. Yes, and from what I heard, that was a wonderful comment. I truly appreciate it. You know, Rex tried to run away, but I got him hooked and pulled him back.
You dragged him back in.
Kicking and screaming. No, I have to agree. Well, now, she did choose the prompt, which was another popular one, prompt 3. If I believe in anything, it is the dark night of the soul. Awe is my religion, and mystery is its church. And I like how you talked in your comment about coming up to the edge and, you know, accepting. Like that, there really is that sense of acceptance of the darkness, of you know, what is beyond our control. It's interesting to me because the last show, the topic was acceptance. And this poem is great because it would have fit in either show. And I think that's really cool. But and now, Rex, I know you were obviously not listening to the read, but understandably so. But did you get a chance to read this poem by Snail Vixen? And would you like to share any thoughts?
All right. The opening line is an easy ride in. The sun outshines their smear campaigns today. The thought with Thelma and Louise rides that notion of sticking together, riding out the terrain and that which comes their way. That's a nice, easy touch. But the hammock angle, it hits on that notation of getting away from it. Because if you look further down that first stanza, the echoes of the lies and rumors start to fade. They even make playful, silly faces as they wave goodbye and return to center. There's a note right in that thought of spending too much online dealing with the hatred, the mongers, those who get their backs up and make money delivering evil unto others because they have nothing else themselves. That's where that next stanza opens up. The dark night of the soul was here, or so it wrote all over my walls. And the essence of that, the leakage into her, she already admits to the fact that I never learned to unpack my baggage. So I still carry around that which I should have let go years ago. But it's taken that need of getting away, the hammock, and just maybe getting into a book and offering up, here you go. I would say it's someone else's turn because I'm in the sunshine today baking in the warmth. There's that notation again of actually getting out into light and away from the screen of demand. And I wish them peace that I feel now. And then the admittance, it wasn't easy. But then the offering, facing the edge of a cliff, I do not have any trouble with that now, because she's finally unloaded that baggage which sat heavy on her back. And the thought with Louise, let's keep going, is her inner voice talking to herself and say, hey, I can do anything now.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. And I too really like that opening line of the Sun Outshines Her Smear campaign. And I like how you mentioned that nowadays the dark night of the soul is often how absorbed we get into, you know, arguments and negativity in social media. And there really is this whole wonderful thought in this of escaping. I really like that she says, I am Thelma and my Louise is the ever-changing book in my hand. Ride or die, I sway in peace as I notice the echoes of lies and rumors start to fade. I like that she has within this that idea of finding that peace that comes with, you know, ignoring the negativity of the outside world. And what one particular line I really also like about this piece is where she says, I wish them the peace that I feel now. You know, have found something wonderful when you wish it upon the most even negative of people, you know, that everybody could, and it's not everybody has to be a read a book in a hammock person, but everybody should have that place, that moment that they can go to turn inward and just focus on finding that peace, that serenity. So just an excellent write and very well done. And all right, back to you, Rex.
Not Stepping in It by Laurent is up next.
All right.
What is a little inference in that opening line?
I step in it all the time, but we all do. Okay. Not stepping in it. Call me God's speck. A fraction of him. Mantra of the masses. Running wild. They don't remember Jesus, because that ain't the way he rolled. Not what he extolled is what you spit from lips glossed in your favorite flavor. Got a vague notion. His words a potion cut up, reassembled into your take on life. Howling together, needing to find each other, you cluster in tongues. Not always pretty, bastardizing scripture in doubt to begin with. Crazy clay you form with invective. Since when did love engender hate? Megachurch apostate, cleaving the airways. You ain't elevating shit. Still on the ground, steaming where you left it. I'm not stepping in it. Got my own song to howl. End poem.
Great read there, Lawrence. And I see you went with prompt heat, too. He who cannot howl will not find his pack. I like that one. I like that. You know, just, and as always, you managed to do that kind of gritty, edgy humor that just really stands out. But before I don't want to comment too much right now because I actually want to hear what Rex has to say. So, Rex, your thoughts.
Well, the easy thing is I could say it rolls on that note of digging into those large church factions and putting them down for what they are. But that would be too easy. But there is that in here because you hit on that one thing. The mega church apostate. Nice. I like that touch of language there. But there are other things. Howling together, needing to find each other, you cluster in tongues. There is that kind of old biblical thought to the Catholic Church of when they start speaking in tongues, they are acclimatized with evil, the devil, unclean things, so to speak. That kind of hits on the note of group speak, hive-mindedness. And you also hit on what was it? It was something else. The bastardized thought of scripture. Each and every one of those rolls out their own version of how scripture is to be maintained within this particular church and their view on the angle. And instead of reading it for what it is, they do pick and choose their little noted angles to beat into their brethren and mold them into what little peons or little munchkins to roll around doing his bidding, so to speak. He becomes that thought of, I am the new Messiah. But no, hey, I need $10 million or God's calling me home. Well, let him take you. You take enough of this already. There is that notation. It's ugly. It's brutal. And you know what? If they got to be run this hard thought of, I've got to be all over the TV. I've got to have my jet airplane, my car. I got to have a $650,000 doghouse complete with toilets and air conditioning for the beach. You know what? You're in the wrong line of business, because hell, you could sell snow cones to Eskimos with that kind of language. The thought is, people get taken in easily, and they bend to the form, and unfortunately, they don't ever get anything out of it, because if they read the book themselves, went to smaller churches, they'd have a better understanding, and they'd feel a little bit more Christian about themselves with somebody who operates on a small flock and maintains that flock itself.
Thank you, Rex. That was a great look at the poem. If I can just jump to that one mention that you made of clustering in tongues. If you have ever had the resolve, the stomach to watch some of that stuff for about half an hour, they will erupt in tongues, some kind of an alien speech, which they say is the divine inspiration. When you can find someone who speaks in tongues, he's speaking. Divine inspiration is filling him with these words, and that's kind of what I was talking about.
Okay, well, I can buy that angle too, although I haven't actually had it thrown at me that way before. But yeah.
Oh Lord, you can't believe some of these people. They will sit there for half an hour, literally, and kind of monostream whatever pops into their head, no matter how disorganized it, using choice words to keep the theme rolling. They'll introduce, you know, little bits, you know, Jesus, God told me, and this is his word, but then come these words, and some of them don't even make sense. They're made up language. It's all such a false, well, better stop right there. Okay.
That's like a carny barker. Come on in, I've got it here. We're all good under these bells and whistles, so to speak.
It's double speak. It's the worst kind of snake oil salesman.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. No, there are actually Christian denominations that believe that you're not saved unless you can speak in tongues. And you know, I try not to dismiss too much and be open-minded, but at the same time, it's just when somebody says, well, this is the way it has to be, you just instantly see a flaw to me in that logic. And I've been to a church sermon like that before. I've been to one of my aunts took me and my sister to a church sermon where there was people speaking in tongues, people dropping and having seizures. It was all very dramatic and, you know, all that.
Yeah, that I look at that. That's kind of hokey to me.
It is. It was. Yeah. It's
still I've been to an outdoor revival. Now, those are well worth going through. The people there are joyous. They're happy.
There are definitely
some
revivals.
And they have a grand old time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you
got to
think Elmer Gantry. Burt Lancaster.
Oh, boy, that's going back.
Elmer Gantry, in which he plays one of these preachers.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't seen that in probably 40 years.
Yeah.
It's long.
We're giving away our age again.
Oh, yeah. But what I really like about this is, you know, I'd like to use the word Godspeck. Call me Godspeck, a fraction of him, mantra of the masses, running wild. They don't remember Jesus because it ain't the way he rolled. You know, so many people forget that the main message of Jesus was love. You know, they have all these little petty rules that they set up. And, you know, as I said, you really have this kind of edgy, dark humor oftentimes that I really appreciate. And especially when you say, you ain't elevating shit. It's still on the ground steaming where you left it. I'm not stepping in it. Got my own song to howl. And I thought that was a perfect line to end on because you're reminding us of how important it is to be an individual, to find your own song. Because when you find that song, then, you know, then the people who sing the same song will be drawn to you and you'll have your pack. You know, what is it they always say, these weirdos are my tribe. And, you know, so I too also like that. I like the you know, not always pretty bastardizing scripture and doubts to begin with, crazy clay you form with invective. Just wonderful phrasing that reminds people, reminds us all of how, and I know Rex mentioned this, people tend to pick and choose what they think people need to hear. Just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And what do we got on the board next there, Rex?
Trains and Boats and Planes by Eric Benson.
All right. Oh, we have a caller. I'm going to bring him on first. And hello, Jeremy. Welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Boo, Jeremy, boo. How are my favorite people doing?
Oh,
I would never spend
wonderful.
An evening anyplace else than with you beautiful people. Good to hear you all.
Good to hear you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Yep. And you got
I love the last poem from you, Lauren, but we don't need to go into a deep religious conversation, so I'm perfectly ready to move on to the next one.
You just want to start speaking in tongues. That's what you want to do.
You know I'm a snake oil salesman at heart.
I thought all women liked men who spoke in tongues.
Absolutely.
If you would like to make a comment on Lauren's poem, go right ahead.
No. I'm not, we're good. I love the conversation you guys have. Let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
I think Lauren did a wonderful job.
Yes, absolutely. All right, I'm going to go ahead and push play for Eric's SoundCloud. So here we go.
Trains and boats and planes. Iconic irony. Always railway siding. Caboose of complexities resides. Steam train persevered. Birthed a bullet train. Steam condensed into electricity. Midway caboose sits, splits decisions, regulates mind synapses, railway lines above. Below intuitive engineer checks, takes note of heart signal colors. Red, orange or green response noted. Speed response monitored. Red screams a curve. Orange sunset on the horizon. Evergreen signal the ideal. Makes for happy passengers. Steam romantic, but electricity swift. Sideline caboose abides. Safe distance gives clarity. Rail traffic alacrity aside. Complexity compass in a GPS seeks congruency with outer travel. Stillness does not exclude movement. Quiet does not bar sound. Questions do not exclude answers. Granny said an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Poet says a poem a day makes for fine travel. Red, orange, and green signals concur. Dionne Warwick, finest caboose caretaker. Trains and boats and planes. She wasn't afraid of mismatched shoes and dark alleys. Between head synapses and heart lapses resides Cinderella's glass slipper. Caboose decide before the clock strikes 12. End delightful poem.
Oh, that was great. That was great. Thank you for the recording, Eric. It is very much appreciated. Okay, Jeremy, you are the new kid on the block, which means you comment first.
You know my rule. You know I don't have to comment until Rex tells me what this is all really about.
We all wish we could follow that rule.
Exactly. You know what? I've said this before. Every time I really am an Eric fan. I follow him. I love his poetry. But every time I know that he's fucking with me, guys, I know that there's always something else going on that I'm not picking up on. And I feel it every time I see it. And the fact that he hits on the colors, I say it this time because of the themes, right? He hits on those themes, and it's kind of like taking my eye off the prize. He's doing something else, and I know that it's like the magician. And I love him for that. I love the fact that there is something else going on in this poem, and I always catch myself wandering off and following the yellow brick road off of something else that he's doing. And I like that his poetry makes me daydream, and I hate that I'm first because I always want to find that piece that makes it all make sense to me. And on this one, what was the freaking stanza? Stillness does not exclude movement. Quiet does not bar sound. Questions do not exclude answers. I like the fact that all of a sudden there is this irony in the middle of this poem that didn't fit to anything else that was going on, but with each line, I shot off. I went off in a different direction. I got on the train, and I'm like, toot, toot, whatever, rain, red, blue, green, whatever you're doing to me, Eric, I'm falling for it, and I like the fact that you were making me go down these paths. And the fact that he makes another – there was a Dionne Warwick reference at the end of this. And it was another instance of me saying, yeah, I know that you had incredibly cool influences, and I see what you're doing here, Eric, and I fall for it every time. So still a fan, love his poetry. Hope that was a great conversation piece for what he did here, but I guess I have nothing more intelligent to say about what he did.
I think that was a wonderful comment. I have to agree with you. It is fun the way his poetry makes you daydream and kind of goes off in a little rabbit trail. He did write to the quote, poetry, three mismatched shoes at the entrance of a dark alley. And there was a lot of sense of threes. Even his stanzas were written in three lines each. So I like how he connects that, and I like how he had the colors of the stoplights. And then he does, like you're right, there's almost like there's little gifts to be unwrapped. You know, it's like reading one of his poems is celebrating Hanukkah. You get, like, presents for 8 days, one at a time. And that's what it's like, to me anyways. So, excellent thoughts there. And Well, let's go ahead and get your thoughts, Rex.
The caboose is the main driving force in this because it references not just the back end, not just what you sit upon, but it manifests itself as you being the caboose, the one who sits, the one who is idle, the one who is always at the back of things because of indecision or over-eagerness. You've got that complexities reside, midway caboose sit. There's deliberate lines like that. Now, the thought with a steam train persevered, birthed the bullet train, steam condensed into electricity. There's a nice traversing there. The steam train that you hit on that note of longevity, a bullet train, fast and speedy, steam condensed into electricity. There's supposed to be a nice even flow from the slow and steady pace through the electric angle, which is a nice steady rhythmic pace, which hits on the trains too. Red screens occur. There's a danger zone there. Evergreen signal, the ideal, makes for happy passengers, steam romantic, but electricity swift. Again, back to that sort of motion. The GPS seeks congruency without a travel. Yes, that comes right back to the caboose. It sits. If it sits idle, that means you're not doing anything to actually get into that romantic angle, which he hits on. And the thought with Dionne Warwick, finest ass caretaker. He's hitting on the note, there's a fine woman and her backside. That's something I appreciate. And the thought of she wasn't afraid of mismatched shoes and dark alleys kind of hints at the equation that, yes, I put myself on the back alley, on the back end of things so much that I am afraid of those dark alleys. And those dark alleys are the caves in which one needs to be born into if you want to hit on Cinderella's by a slipper before she turns into a pumpkin and you're left with nothing.
I like that. Dionne Warwick and her fine caboose. I thought that was a real thoughtful comment and really thorough, too. And I like how you mentioned that there's that changing that between the steam engine and the electricity and how it just kind of flows into it and the idea of picking up speed. So excellent comment and great observations. And Laurent, your thoughts on Eric's poem.
Yeah, my singular thought is that no one should ever have to follow one of Rex's analyses. I don't think it's fair at all, quite frankly. But leaving that aside, iconic irony, all this railway siding, caboose of complexities resides. You have to ask yourself, why is that train on the siding? Is there an issue? Is there a problem? Is there another train traveling in the opposite direction that you have to step aside from? Steam train persevered. You're looking perhaps at old technology, and then birthed the bullet train. We have that new technology, steam condensed into electricity. And there is a way to move faster now. And the poet puts the caboose midway. He doesn't put it at the end. It's implying that caboose can move in either direction with equal alacrity, splits decisions, regulates mind synapses, railway lines above. The intuitive engineer is able to gauge and take note of heart's signal colors, which way is the heart being moved, and the speed at which it's being moved, as he says, is monitored. Red screams a curve, orange sets on the horizon. If you move too fast, it's dangerous. The sunset is out there in front of you. It's not necessary to move perhaps that fast. What was romantic in the old days perhaps has changed, but electricity, the new train, the new way of thinking perhaps, is very, very swift. Now, being sidelined, The Gabu supplies, it waits its time. It needs its space. The rail traffic has to have gone past. And that inner GPS that he speaks of allows the acceptance of, well, he says, speaks congruity with outer travel, but there's that incongruity of inner and outer travel combined. And being still, being thoughtful, being acceptable, being accepted, wow, accepting the emotion in a moment of stillness includes the motion. You can accept both at the same time. You can accept movement in that moment of stillness. And being quiet does not bar the outside sounds. And asking a question does not say there is no answer to it. I like the reference to Dionne Warwick. It was very nicely done, but she wasn't afraid of mismatched shoes and dark alleys. Almost goes back to that stanza, stillness does not exclude movement. Quiet does not bar sound. The last stanza, between the way we think intellectually and the way our heart wants us to think or moves us, is that witching hour at 12 o'clock when we can turn it into a pumpkin if we're not careful. And who does that glass slipper actually fit? It is an awful lot of thought has gone into this particular piece, but I thought he did an excellent job at it.
That was an awesome comment, Lauren. That was awesome. That was awesome thoughts, Lauren. I really,
excellent.
I really was taken aback by it. That was really cool. Well done.
Yes. Yes, I have to agree. Absolutely.
Thank you, Phil.
You know, I really like this all the way through. I like how he stayed, like as I mentioned before, he really kept with the theme of threes, three lines per stanza. I'm assuming the red, orange, and green are the colors of the traffic lights where he lives. Either that or Eric is colorblind because, you know, here, as we all know, it's red, green, what is it? Okay, I don't drive. I have to think about this. It's green, yellow, red. Yes, that's it. I don't think
you don't drive. You don't drive, Pam. So how would you know?
I can't be expected to know these kind of things. But I really thought it was wonderful the way he went with that imagery and the whole idea that there are times when life tells us to go and it tells us to stop, and there's times where life says, this is that moment where you just wait. You wait on the edge of the dark alley and you contemplate before moving forward. And I think you all had just thoughtful and absolutely wonderful comments. And this was a very well done write. And all right, where are we heading to next, Rex?
Deaf Ears by Darkened Doras. And
did you drop? Oh,
where would you like that one to go?
Okay, who's reading this?
That's why I asked. Where would you like it to go?
What? Oh, I thought you were assigning readers.
Oh, I am? Okay.
Yeah.
Jeremy, how about reading this for us, please?
Damn you turds for not having your act together. Damn you both. Deaf Ears. No insult to the author of this poem. I'm picking on Pam and Rex. Deaf Ears by Darkened Auroras. Look around at the dismantled state this world we live in is in. You wish upon a shooting star? Well, my hope is paper thin. You think your prayers will reach them, those angels high above? You say they're always listening, ready to send their love. I say they turn a blind eye. Surely they don't see our pain. If we did, then they would know. This world's fucking gone insane. I know you want to believe, when you're down on your knees, that your prayers will be answered, but deaf ears can't hear our pleas. End poem.
Great read there, Jeremy. Thank you very much. And, of course, we should all know that Rex here is the troublemaker on this team. You know, he just pretends he doesn't know what his job is and hopes that I'll start doing it. So,
Pass the buck.
Dog was being thrown down.
Throwing darts.
Right? Oh, my gosh. But I really like this, and she wrote to prompt 7, the high heavens were full of little shrunken deaf ears instead of stars. And let's go ahead and start with your thoughts, Lawrence.
Well, I thought the prompt was a fascinating one, and I thought the way it was addressed was very, very common sense. So how often have we looked at the stars, called upon heaven, which is certainly within that locale, or so we believe, and supplied our own answers, and then thanked the stars for that? Well, no. We supplied the answers ourselves. The stars indeed do have little shrunken deaf ears. Come on. I say they turn a blind eye. Surely you don't see our pain. If they did, then they would know. This world's fucking gone insane. And, you know, if you keep track of the day-to-day of the world we live in, there is much to be said for the current insanity, skewed entirely out of whack with virtually everything we're brought up to believe. So, yeah, it's like the world has gone insane. And if there were truly someone who listened from up above, they would have said something by now. But no, just some deaf ears twinkling.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a book that reflects really well the insanity of the world. And I do like how she took, I'm glad to see somebody write to this prompt. I thought it was kind of just a hard-hitting reminder of how oftentimes it seems as if, that people are, and life is like deaf and blind to all the suffering going on. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
I think Ron hit on that note of get off your ass and do something about it. There's a double whammy note in this, because it also hits on the thought of God helps those who help themselves. So get up off your ass and do something about that which is. Why should you be pulled out of the fire simply because you beg for it rather than are willing to actually do something about it yourself? Stand up. Make that effort. Be willing to take that slap in the face. But if you're all you're going to do is ask for that which you know is the impossible, then nothing ever changes. And the blind eye is actually your own, and the deaf ear is the tone in which you have developed, where you ask for something and it is always given to you rather than actually working for it yourself.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And, you know, you're so right. Part of, you know, I mean, to me, I believe in prayer. I believe in the power of prayer. I think it's important, you know, people do whatever form of prayer works for them. But, you know, sometimes, and obviously there are some people that they can't do anything physically to help people. They don't have the abilities or the finances. But there are those people who I think use the phrase, I'll pray for you, like a crutch for themselves. Because by saying that, they get to, you know, take away any responsibility from themselves. They place the responsibility solely on whatever higher power they believe in will do, rather than, what they can do. At least, that's what, as I was listening to your comment, Rex, those were the kind of thoughts that came to my head. And, You know, so excellent observations. And, I really, and then another thing on a technical level, I have to say, I think Darkened Aura just has beautiful spot-on meter when it comes to her rhyming poetry, and I really appreciate that. And, Jeremy, you read this wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, really cool follow, Pam. I mean, yeah, because, wow. I mean, I wasn't even going to go that way, but yeah, there are a lot of, I'll pray for you. There are a lot of caveats that we have as a culture, as humans interacting with each other, that don't mean anything and they mean everything. And so that's, wow. That isn't even where I was going with this. So it was cool that you made that comment. No, I liked what Laurent and Rex said about this as well. And what I wanted to say, because they really hit on the content of this, is what I liked with their subtle moves. I like the fact that there's question mark in the third of the first. And I liked all of the punctuation, and I liked the fact that this carried itself in a way that made you want to stay engaged the whole time. So I really kind of went down to the nitty-gritty after you guys already went about the content of it all, but you took it to another level that I was enjoyed the conversation of. So, great poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. I like that you brought up punctuation, because I often forget how important it is with the placement of punctuation, and not on a technical level, but how it can give us the right moments that the poet wants us to pause, within the right. So, great observation. All right, and back to you, Rex.
All right, we've got Poetry Shoes by Kenny W. And Laurent, you're definitely going to enjoy this one.
Every time you say that, I flinch, but okay. Oh, boy.
Ooh, that sounds...
Poetry Shoes by Kenny W. 3 months since I started trying to write poetry, and I still don't know what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. Be nice to stop. Wish I could stop. What am I hoping for? Not to get rich, because that's a shoe in. Guaranteed. Better to have your words backed by loud guitar, drums, and bass, and call yourself a singer-songwriter. But even then, fame and riches not guaranteed. To have my works published, well, I can do that. Vanity publishing, or idiot publishing, I call it. To have my words immortalized and remembered, maybe on a tea towel, sold on Amazon, reduced to $3.99, buy two, get one free. To be an asshole performing poet, and be clapped and told I'm wonderful. Don't need that either. My dog thinks I'm wonderful, and that matters more. Biscuits help her decide. So I entered the dark alley, innocent and unsuspecting of all the different forms and shapes my poetry wanted to take. Unaware these forms and shapes all have names. I knew there was rhyming and non-rhyming, and to me that was it. But oh no, Google it. Loads of different names and structures and types of verses and stanzas. I mean, be serious. Most of my poetry rhymes and tries to be funny. This is an exception on both counts. Sorry. Not sure about Mr. Simmons. I'll read his when he reads mine. That's unfair. He may be on Amazon tea towels already. What did he mean by three unmatched shoes? Why is poetry sometimes so difficult? Is it because very clever people write it? Charles certainly looks a thinker. Love to have a beer with him one day. Just found his stuff on Best Poems Encyclopedia. God, he's good. 3 months of trying. I wish I was half as good. I like his rhymes. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Laurent. I have to say, I think this is absolutely one of my favorite Kenny W. poems. No, and I always like his poetry, but he's right, as he says, he usually writes short and funny, which he does very well. This, I mean, my goodness, I just really appreciate how he brings us along on the ride through his thoughts with such panache and such little biting lines of humor that make fun of himself, of society, of all of us, you know, hopeful writers to be. I before I comment further, I would like to go ahead, and I'm going to turn first to Rex for his thoughts.
It's wry, it's sarcastic, it's funny, it offers up a little bit of pretentious attitude, and it rolls quite well for the thought. You got, I like the Amazon tea towels at $3.99. Hey, three for a buck, three for ten. I mean, that was pretty cool right there. And what was it else? To be an asshole performing poet, be clapped and told I'm wonderful. Don't need that either. My dog thinks I'm wonderful. Matters more. Biscuit, help her decide. It's full of snarky lines. It pokes fun at those who think their shit don't stink. And because he hits on there's a note in here of, not to get rich, because that's a shoo-in, guaranteed. And then offers up, better to go with a loud guitar, drums, and bass, call yourself a singer, songwriter. And then turns around and, hey, even that fame and rich is not guaranteed, but it is guaranteed as a shoo-in if he was to continue writing poetry. I like the thought in that. And the vanity publishing, calling it idiot publishing, yes, because you're paying for it. And it'll probably still fit there. And then the back end rolling into the sort of, I thought there was only rhyming and unrhyming until I Googled it. Oh, yeah, I found out there's all manner of shit out there I don't really know. So you had a lot of fun with this. Just poked a lot of some little bit of snarkies in there, too. He enjoyed this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can tell. You can tell when somebody has had fun writing something, and you're right. You can tell that he enjoyed this, and you're right, there's a lot of fun, snarky humor within this. So excellent comment there, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I thought it was an excellent read, Lauren. I mean, you captured this feel of this 100%. What Rex said out of the gate was wry, and yeah, it is wry. And what I really want to focus in on is how he said Amazon a couple times, because when you think about poetry and when you think about what the art form is and how it's not a money making capitalist kind of enterprise, and how you look at Amazon as the exact opposite of that, and to be honest, I am not anywhere familiar at all with I was thinking Charles, not, it was not Charles Simic. I thought it was Charles Bukowski is what he was doing, because of how raw the whole write was. And so the fact that it was about Simic, I'm over here Googling what Simic even was about, because as much as I studied poetry, I've not even known anything about him. So embarrassment on that side, but I like the fact that it was just raw. And it's very modern day, and it's, if we think about what poetry has to offer, this is something that is pointing at it, and you have to love the art form for what it is. So I like the fact that it was something that was very antiquated in the fact that it talks to the greats in that regard. So enjoyed it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just really enjoy when a poem writes about someone or something that makes somebody want to start looking information up or looking their writing up, the poet. You know, so I think it's really cool. I will say that as far as self-publishing goes, I do think it serves a good purpose. I do think, you know, books should be published but won't have that opportunity. It's getting published by opposing us. It's such, so competitive. So there are those times where self-publishing does work really well. But then there are times we look at people, like people who self-publish and don't have a someone to go through and find their grammar and spelling errors. Like there was a time period where I was homeschooling my daughters, and my oldest daughter at the time, I had downloaded a math book for her, and she was like, I can't deal with this. There's too many spelling errors. There's too many grammar errors. And I said, well, it's a math book. It's not a spelling and grammar book. She's like, yeah, but I can't focus on the math when I'm so busy criticizing this person for their bad spelling. And I thought, well, that's a really good point. I know, that was a bit of a tangent. Sorry about that. Couldn't help it. But again, I love the snarky, biting lines. The humor within this, as you both said, it's dry and it's wry. This is one of those poems I've absolutely just enjoyed reading. And, Lauren, you did a wonderful job of reading that. Your thoughts?
Wait a minute. I mean, Pam, continue on that. I mean, if you're distracted by one thing and you go to another, I mean, I think that's a very legitimate thing about any part of art forms. If you're distracted by, it's like the blue dog paintings. When you see something that distracts you so much that you don't focus on what the other intention is, I mean, that's kind of a very valid point on what you're saying, and it's kind of taking me to a different thought process of this whole thing.
Well, thank you. And your thoughts, Lawrence?
Yeah, I like what Jeremy just said. But, you know, poetry is full of intentions. Otherwise, it wouldn't be poetry. I read intentions as interpretations. Many different ways of trying to say something. And by the way, I like rye as well, Jeremy, but especially when it's well toasted. So cheers to you, Rex. I've met so many people who think that poetry is simply slapping words together that rhyme at the ends of sentences. And, you know, if the end of sentences tell a story, that's great. And if they don't, well, you know, it's poetry. Figure it out. But it's not at all what it is. And so many people, oh, I can write poetry. Oh, I used to write, you know. I mean, they offer you a poem that rhymes, but all it is words that rhymes. It doesn't necessarily become poetry at that point. And insofar as having works published, vanity publishing, idiot publishing, or Amazon, maybe on a tea towel sold on Amazon, reduced to $3.99, well, you know, that's phrasing for sale. Again, that's not poetry. To be an asshole performing poet and be clapped and told I'm wonderful, well, if that's the reason that you write, you'll never get applauded. And you never get told you're wonderful either, I would assume. We have more than biscuits that help us decide what is wonderful or not wonderful. So people wander into the world of poetry and find out that all of a sudden, this is a discipline. There are rules. There are regulations. There are avenues to traverse that have to be carefully structured. It's serious. He says, be serious. Now, most of my poetry rhymes and tries to be funny, and that's a very legitimate use of poetry, but it has to be, I think, more than just obviously funny. There has to be some subtlety within, and there is subtlety in a lot of what Mr. Simic says. I mean, when you think about the quote or the line in this poem, what did he mean by three unmatched shoes? Well, think about it. It's a dark alleyway. You see three unmatched shoes. You can account for two of them. You know, okay, he grabbed one shoe there, one shoe there. That was a third shoe. And that is the poetry of intention, or the poetry of that requires the interpretation that the poet puts behind it. And that really is the be-all and the end of all of poetry, I think, and his, in his not adulation, but his appreciation of Simic God. He's good. 3 months of trying, and I wish I was half as good. I like his rhymes. And he engages the subtleties, then he goes right back to the basics. I like his rhymes. I thought it was a very clever, well-written piece.
Lauren, you're 100% correct. I love that comment. There are rules. There are rules to this game, and I love the fact that you identified that. That was a great comment.
Thank you, Charlie.
Wonderful. Great comments, everybody. Thank you. And all right, back to you, Rex.
All right. Credo by Robert J. Teague. Uncertainty assures me, so I've come to trust in doubtfulness, the questioning of everything, advising judgments not to jump into a chasm of untruth where feeling balk at parachute. If sound convictions will not speak when interviewed by scrutiny or only answer mystery, let hesitations testify. Inconstancy shall mean to me all mortal creed outside of God. And yet, we can reach new beliefs from winding paths through wilderness, the thinning mists of innocence, the stubborn smog of ignorance, all strange terrain and lands renamed, inspiring souls to know a way beyond what we were sold or told, or what a fact forgets to say. Despite my blindness, faith could see above these walls surrounding me, or walk with reason through these lands, which no persuasion understands, without adventure, sin, ordeal. Your self-reliance should be real. Dear seeker, may we never find the motive to enclose a mind, or only go by what some heard between the bedlam and the bird. Devotion cannot be a word. With wonder, let's embrace our nights, yet pray we wake with inner light. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, I really appreciate this poem. This is just a wonderful night of poetry. Again, we've got wonderful rhyme and flow, and I just love how there's this such a sense of wisdom within these words. And Jeremy, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I like the play. I like the play of religion, and I like the play that the devotion of it all. Like you said at the very beginning, I like the fact that there's touches of it, and it's not in your face. I like the fact that you were able, as a reader, to take this as far as you want to take it. Advising judgments not to jump into the chasm of untruth where feelings balk at parachutes. I love that in the third. I love the fact that you... There is a faith. There is something that's very personal to all of us, and that's what we forget when we talk about this as a bigger entity, and we talk about it as a bigger construct of religion. The fact that this is kind of acknowledging the fact that this is a personal journey is what I really took from this entire poem, and the fact that it's even titled Credo. Credo is something that's very personal, in my opinion. I mean, everyone needs to take their journey for everything as their own piece, and it's not to be judged upon. And I really appreciate the fact that this poem was bold enough to ride that balancing act and not cast judgment and not make anyone go one way or the other, because I think that's what it's all about. So I enjoyed it for that message.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. That was a wonderful comment and observation. And you're right, because it's a very spiritual poem about a personal journey that never comes across as preachy, but yet just kind of shows, as you mentioned, the journey, the personal journey that happens. And so wonderful observation. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like your comment, and I especially enjoyed what Jeremy had to say in his comment as well, especially when it comes to credo. You know, words we live by, faith we live by, beliefs that we live by, and yet in this day and age we have become so encouraged to doubt our beliefs, the questioning of everything. And if sound convictions, if what we feel is true, will not speak, or in other words, will not answer when interviewed by scrutiny, then yeah, maybe hesitation should testify, because inconsistency seems to be outside of God. And there's so many ways to reach new beliefs, and he lists them, from winding paths to wilderness, to thinning mists of innocence, emphasis on thinning, as we begin to see through what we, our naivete, as it were, or as our naivete evaporates. The stubborn smog of ignorance is an outstanding phrase, because that's exactly what it is. And the land we knew, now strange, and lands renamed. But despite that evident blindness, faith is out there and can see through the smog, as it were, the walls that surround me, and encourages the self-reliance, the credo. And so let us not enclose our minds or only go by what some heard between the bedlam and a bird. Don't listen to the idle chatter, the stream of noise, mindless noise that comes into us. Because devotion is more than a word. It's a belief. It's a system of beliefs. It's what's inside of us that attaches ourselves to a particular thing. And so with that in mind, let's embrace our night and pray we wake with inner light, gifted, as it were, by revelation, by understanding. I really enjoyed this piece.
Absolutely. Well said there, Lauren. Great comment. Yeah, I too enjoyed this. And I particularly was drawn to where he says, "Dear seeker, may we never find the motive to enclose a mind." I like that he, this is written to those who seek. So, excellent comment there, Lauren. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
It's twofold. Credo is the right word. It holds that underlying thought of binding one to the bond of the underlying motive which drives one, that which they can stand on fully. Faith works with this, and he's not shoving it down our throats with it, but he's offering up notions to the thought of whatever you believe in. You should also follow on that same path, but you should do it with discernment and clarity of thought. The idea of beyond what we were sold or told, or what our slick back forgets to say. And offers that notion, believe nothing of what you see, or believe nothing of what you hear and half of what you see, and then understand that which is not there in front of your face to begin with. Clarity of thought, discernment. Your self-reliance should be for real. And that's the truth in that. I like this stanza, "Dear seeker, may we never find the motive to enclose a mind, or only go by what some heard between the bedlam and a bird." Boy, that is the madness and the twittering madness. So, again, clarity of thought and discernment of that which you understand and that which you're being given. If you can get through those two angles, then you're better off. And then again, let's embrace our night, yet pray we wake with inner light. There's that notion of, hey, it's all right, the darkness is part of us, because we are two sides of the same coin, the yin and the yang. We can't have one without the other. But to understand, you embrace that night, but you also need to understand there must be clarity and inner light once we wake in the morning. Otherwise, you start the day off just as black as the night you just slept through.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. I like how you brought up the importance of discernment. That was a wonderful observation and great comment. All right. Where are we heading to next?
A small systemic word salad rhyme by Captain B. And you got a song right. for that.
Yes, we do. And here we go.
A slice of Simic word salad, inspired by the Nightmare Song from Act 2 of the light opera Iolanthe by Gilbert and Sullivan. Poem. Passage book for my trip to sail on the ship, which traveled expressly at midnight. I was longing to stay in places far away, with the familiar shores no longer in sight. Well, the agency said that the journey would spread across the Atlantic to the famed Isle of Wight, and I thought this quite rare, for while we were there, I could sail Mecca-Solent to the shore of Southern Bight. Now the dock-waiting crowd all at once grew quite loud, the crew concerned they'd erupt in a fight. So the boisterous horde, they then all piled on board to the deck with its windows alight. This sojourn was my first, and I had such a thirst to enjoy this experience to its height. So I vowed not to sleep till I saw a steady creep of the first rays of morn's early light. To stay up was my goal, and to that end my fill my soul with strong drink and amiable converse all night. But discourse of religion did not interest me a smidgen, nor of church, so I searched for something else to excite. Then one of the staff declared with a laugh that I should get inked with a memento of my cruise. So the crew chose a lone shoe as the image for my tattoo, and they were paying, so who was I to refuse? Then we up on deck in the dark to celebrate my lark with good fellowship, tobacco, and strong booze. But staying awake at all costs is an exercise that exhausts, and my enthusiasm I started to lose. So while on deck I gazed at stars and smoked some cigars, while I waxed poetic and courted the muse. But although they did glisten, the stars didn't listen. Then ample drink did cause me to snooze. Come morning I did wake with a dismal headache, amid surroundings guaranteed to confuse. My brain was undone like a lizard in the sun, and I had only myself to accuse. If one chooses to prowl with the crew and howl at the moon and the stars, then prepare for bad news. For antics so frenetic may conclude much less aesthetic than one planned with sensibilities bruised. In light of day, I surmised that I'd been ill-advised to secure this inked image of one lone shoe. My only defense was my extreme intemperance, so tonight I think that I will get two. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I thought that was a really clever write and a very clever title. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
All right. I'll start with this one. Passage book for my trip to sail on the ship, which traveled expressly at midnight. I was longing to stay in places far away with familiar shores no longer in sight. The fact that it travels expressly at midnight kind of already paints that notion of a Twilight Zone episode coming on. And it seems to be a nice, even sail. Crowds are a little boisterous on the docks. They all get on the boat. Then the sort of having drink and talking all night because he wanted to see them in the morning, but religion didn't, so he gets in with the crew. Yeah, that's always a good time. Because they've got all the good booze. Yes, they'll always make sure you're the one to lose. And quite frankly, image of one shoe as a tattoo, boy, you must have been really roasted at that point in time. And what did that shoe look like? And wake up the next day. I like the thought. My brain was undone like a lizard in the sun. I only had myself to accuse. I thought that was a nice comical note, baked like a lizard in the sun. And the thought of reality coming to bear, having one shoe as a tattoo. Now, the second question arises. Where was that shoe placed? And then again, you finish out the bottom end is, so tonight I think that I will get two more shoes. Kind of hits on that notice of that one quote, three shoes. Forget what that one was. Kind of hit, oh, great. Three shoes in a dark alley, wasn't it?
Yeah, she actually wrote to every single prompt. She had a little bit of influence from every prompt.
Okay.
Yeah, like the line you brought up about the a big like the lizard in the sun, which I thought also was a really cool line.
The voyage of the damned, and the damned was you.
Exactly. But yeah, she wrote that prompt was prompt six. Time the lizard in the sunlight. It doesn't move, but its eyes are wide open.
And I still got to ask, where the hell was the shoe tattooed? Was it placed on your forehead?
I would guess, my guess is the shoe was planted on the ass cheek, but, you know, that would be my guess. That is a good question, though. That is a good question. But I like how you brought up that it's almost like a Twilight Zone episode. And there's also that humor in it, that humorous idea of, you know, when there is only, you know, what did happen to that one shoe, you know, and it makes the imagination start soaring. So, excellent comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Absolutely. To continue on what you guys are saying, and I love what Captain does, I love what Bobby does, and I like the fact that it's even a SoundCloud because I get into the whole feel of what she's trying to create. I mean, I want to hang out with Captain every night on any kind of trip that's going on in these storied poems because it's so fun to get caught up in the rhyme of all of it and the fact that there's so much joy. And there's an analytical joy to it. I don't know how to describe it, but you know when someone feels joy and they also know that they're feeling joy and they're able to look back? I feel like Captain is able to do that in her poems. I feel like she's able to, the way her language is she's able to take me to that point, but she's also able to take me to that point and say, hey, look, this is a good time. And so the nuances of her poetry and what she's doing always makes me envious and always makes me want to open the taps and share a beer and say, hey, let's all go out and hang out at Captain's house kind of thing. And that's, I don't know, it's an invitation to poetry, and the fact that her tone does that to me time and time again makes me a fan.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Well said there, Jeremy. And Laurent, your thoughts?
B2 is always very clever in what she writes. But she doesn't try to get, I think, too deep. She keeps things very relatable. And this poem has a certain flavor of the hair of the dog that bit me. If you engage on an experience that develops beyond your capacity to experience it appropriately, and you end up passing out, and you wake the next morning not entirely well, and not entirely sure of what just happened, maybe the only way to cure that is to experience it again. So tonight I think that I will get two. Now that's reducing a very fine poem down to a certain crudity. Wow, that's a hell of a word, crudity. But it isn't crude at all. It's absolutely true. If one chooses to prowl with a crew and a howl, that can be the crew of the boat, it can be the bartender and the servers at a bar, any number of places that you tend to involve yourself in. And once you've involved yourself and accepted and gone full-blown head over heels, ooh, that was a hell of an experience. I feel terrible. Maybe I'd better experience it again. Very clever.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought it was delightful. It was fun. It has some nice, just kind of body humor. Not body as in, you know, obviously there's no swear words, but, you know, you have the humor of drinking and enjoying life and getting the tattoo that you let other people choose for you. You know, just really clever and entertaining and relatable. So excellent write and very well done. And all right, what do we got next, Rex?
Shitting Out Nuts by Naomi Serra. And you have a style for that.
All right, let me find that in. Here we go.
Shitting Out Nuts. He sets his alarm clock to rise at exactly 30 minutes past 5. Through downpouring springs, past clingy, close summers, into the bitter, dark bite of fall, an icy winter morn. 27 years as a moth, eating his way out of a damp, dirty closet. Drags from bed his aching frame that screams from the inside in every slow, shaky step, too hardened to utter a whimper or even a sigh. Hauls on that raggedy house coat, as old and tired out as his bones, that hangs from the back of the bathroom door hook. I've been wanting to buy him a new one, but he always says, "Don't you dare, that old one is just fine. You keep your money to buy something pretty for yourself." He always sits on the same stool at the kitchen counter, lights up a cigarette, coughs, and turns to spit into the sink, staring out the window into the backyard. "You mowed the lawn yesterday," he says this morning. "Yes," I answer, handing him a mug of hot coffee. His fingers, worn black, wrap around the cup as he hugs it to his chest, as if trying to seep out a few droplets of comforting warmth. "Thank you for the lawn and the coffee," he smiles, kisses my forehead. "That's the least I can do," I say. "You shit out your nuts drowning in that pit every freaking day." "Well, at least they supply the toilet paper," he winks and smiles, "even though it is cheap and scratches my ass." We laugh, and I think, damn, I love this man.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And she does say, check out AN, so I'm going to read that. In her AN, it says, oh, and she did write to prompt 8, "In the dark to see you, ass scratchers, in the dark to see." And the AN says, "In my town of Thetford Mines, most men worked in asbestos mines all their lives. Today the mines have closed, but many suffer from lung cancer and respiratory problems. It was one hell of a hard life, scratching the asses of big companies for whom they were just a number." And I'm really glad she added to the AN because it's already a wonderful poem. But when you add ands like that, I think it adds to the depth of the poetry. And I like how she makes this about a bigger issue, about how the rich oftentimes treat those who work for them like a company, I should say, treat people that work for them like a number. But she brings this down to the individuality. You know, she gives us a story of an individual man and an individual woman, you know, who both work hard, both love each other, and, you know, find like those little moments of love, connection, and humor to get them through such a difficult life. So I like how it goes to the individuality of the moment, but and the emotions, but also touches on those deeper social issues, like the horrific work conditions. So just a powerful write and very well done. And Laurent, let's start with your thoughts. Oh, Laurent had to drop. Okay. Well, I'm glad he was able to call in and join us. Well, Jeremy, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, you nailed it, Pam. Sorry. No, you nailed it, Pam, 100%. I loved what comment you said. I mean, I think you nailed it 100%. And then, what really took me was the line of thank you for the lawn and coffee. That is when the story of this poem made me smile. Because, everything that you said about the struggle of the piece, it became warm to me at that point. And so that's when it became real. And I love when poets add a SoundCloud, because tone is 100% important for poetry across the board. And the fact that there was a SoundCloud with this one, I was grooving with it. And I keyed in on that specific point of this, and that was the turn for me. And if you're gonna make a social commentary about whatever, I think it was spot on. Because I was grooved in the story of it all. And you don't really start to get the emotional tug until you find that line or that moment in which it really strikes a chord for you. And I'm glad that this poet was able to find that with me. So enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And that was a line that really struck a chord. It was such a tender moment. And so excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I would have pegged this as the coal miner without that note in the AN. But as mining boy, that's some nasty stuff. And those mines have been closed now, but they haven't been closed that long. They didn't close down until 2012. And we haven't been using asbestos or anything for quite some time, because we know of the dangers of asbestos itself and what it does to the lungs. And have for a good 30 years, probably, at least, maybe a bit longer.
Oh, exactly.
And the thought in their stuff of him turning down anything new kind of hits on that familiar note. He knows he's dying, and he knows he won't be around that much longer. And still, there's a touch of joke in his voice. As well as hers too. You shit out your nuts drowning in that bit every friggin' day. And well, at least they supply the toilet paper, even though it is cheap and scratches my ass. And then that's a double kind of thought, because that's exactly what asbestos does to your lungs and your nasal passages. It scratches and ruins and sets you to the point where not even you breathe well enough, but you get little extra pockets for the for pneumonia to set in and swell up with extra fluid. Hell of a way to go.
It's scary, that's for sure. The struggle that the dying body goes through when poison like that is brought into it. So just a wonderful observation and a great comment there, Rex. And, all right, what do we got next?
Alone Not Lonely by Linda M.B. And this one's yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Alone Not Lonely by Linda M.B. It goes like this. I slept at night, thanks for asking. No need to feel the warmth of the asking in the blinding light of others. Preferred to seek the darkened covers of solitude. I shrink away from crowded places, not looking at the sea of faces surrounding me everywhere. Preferred to breathe my own sweet air. Alone I walked within a box constructed by my crafty mind, not caring if I was alone or looking for more of my kind, dwelling mostly in my head, sleeping in a lonely bed, and loving it a perfect space of no one else was there a trace. I learned to howl eventually, not something that comes naturally, too tightly wound for far too long. I loosened up as time went on, and as surveying at the moon, I did watch silently by stars, while most who know me sighed and said, I may as well have come from Mars. End poem. Oh, now that is just absolutely just delightful and entertaining. I really enjoyed that one. And Rex, your thoughts.
He who cannot howl will not find his pack. Oh, there's the different inferences of not needing to find a pack, being comfortable in the howl of that lone wolf, that one who is more comfortable without the binding strings and attitudes of those to restrict one, keep them from that run, from that breath of fresh air. And like she says, alone I walk within a box constructed by my crafty mind, not caring if I was alone or looking for more of my kind. There's that note of walking to the sound of a different drum or something along that line. The learning the howl, eventually, that's something that comes with actually experience the sense of self in the moment and understanding. Yeah, it might have taken a little time, but now you understand that which is you and how you howl. And as far as the back end, I may as well come from Mars. That goes with the notion of, hey, you know what? Your tunes, you don't step to mine. Hey, I'm just fine with that. No problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. I thought you might like that end line, connect with that, Rex. You know, and you're right, there is just a wonderful sense of individuality, of enjoying their time alone, of appreciating and enjoying themselves. And I liked that she says, I learned to howl eventually, that learning to just relax and to appreciate yourself. It makes me think, honestly, of, and I don't even know if you remember this, but there was years ago when we first met on All Poetry, and we were talking on the phone, and you howled, and I tried to howl. And both you and I think my daughter was like 7 years old at the time, my youngest, Nessa, said, you sound like a dying cow. I kid you not, Jeremy. Both of them. Both of them. My daughter and Rex, without hearing each other, said at the same time, you sound like a dying cow. But, yeah, that was a wonderful comment there, Rex, and thank you for that. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Yeah, rule 14, first of all, is always I get to go after Rex. I've said this 100 times before. I love going after Rex. I love his insights.
I know you do.
I love both of your insights. This one for me was about format. I loved your read, Pam, because I think you did a very great job of staying with the pace of it. But I think there was when we're talking about the art form of poetry, I like the fact that this does some subtle moves and the spacings of it all that I was kind of taken aback. And so I really enjoyed the device that went along with all of it. And that's what I wanted to focus on. I mean, I think a lot of times we forget that in poetry, and I think this really celebrated that, and I want to read more of Linda's stuff because of that specific fact that that she was able to focus on the vice. I mean, it goes so much further when someone is able to measure and meter and format with purpose and make poetry both a visual art form and a lyrical art form and kind of an emotional art form. I mean, there's so many levels to go at it, and I feel like when someone takes the effort of doing that, I take notice, and I feel like this one really did that for me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought up the spacing and the format. I too really appreciated that about this writing, and I highly recommend reading Linda MB for anybody who hasn't. She has got some wonderful poetry. The one thing I kind of regretted in my reading is I felt like I wanted to do a little bit of more of a pause between I Learned to Howl and Eventually, but I appreciate how she did put that space between I Learned to Howl and then that's their space and Eventually. So it gives you that pause. It keeps you in the author's headspace.
No apology necessary, Pam. I mean, I think that you read it. I was really intrigued by the way you read it, to be honest with you. I mean, no bullshit. I mean, I like the fact that you didn't do that because it opened my mind to a different way of it. And honestly, any time with poetry that anyone says the word howl, I think a guinea. So I like the fact that you did your spacing and you did your lack of pause because it was a different way that I would have interpreted if I would have read it. So it was really cool. So to have you do that and perform it the way that you did it and whatever Linda would have intended for it and then what I would have done, it's like that's the beauty of poetry, the fact that we can all interpret it differently and present it, and it creates the craft in kind of an artistic way that I enjoy. So it was very cool, Pam.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Sorry, I'm slightly distracted, so I'm just saying absolutely to everything. But thank you. And Rex, I do see that you've put up a write by Thomas B., but I really don't want to rush. Yeah, I don't want us to rush through his reading comments. I'd rather have him be one of the carryovers. So with that being said, let's go ahead and mention some things that we have coming up. So Rex, for your Sunday show, Rhythm and Rhyme, what do we got going on?
How do you orchestrate your electric lights, electric light orchestra notes?
Awesome.
And songs.
I like them. Great choice.
Can I promote?
Yes.
Sure. Please. What you got?
I mean, I've got a Rex and Pam all hot tub party. I mean, BYOB, but I mean, whatever rules go and. You guys are welcome at any time.
Oh, awesome. I assume there's going to be a hot tub.
I love hanging with you guys. Sorry if it's crazy, but I really enjoy the poetry conversation anytime with you guys.
Oh, well, you know what? We enjoy having you. I'm so glad when any, like, I can say, hey, Jeremy, when's the next time you're calling? And there you are.
Actually, you know what? You keep coming on. You got to bring something with you some next time.
I'm trying to bring more poets into this. I'm talking to AP Poets, and I am trying to recruit my followers into this conversation. So I am trying.
No.
Bring
a piece from you.
Oh, I don't write poetry. You know that, Rex. Love it, guys. It's always fun.
Love
it's
you
always
too.
A pleasure hanging
Love
with
you
both.
All. And, oh, my gosh, yeah, this has been just a great night. I have to say thank you to Rex for, as always, being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Lawrence and Jeremy for calling in, for Robbie for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to check out all the contests that our hosts and hostesses are running, especially next week is Halloween week. It's my absolute favorite. In my opinion, it's better than Christmas week. So make sure to check all that fun stuff out. And of course, join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Night, gang.